Right, good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, January 4th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy New Year, everybody. It is 2016 and 11 degrees with snow here in upstate New York. Yeah, it got cold. We had a little polar vortex dip down our way last night. Before I crashed out, it was about 15, and it showed the real feel as -4 degrees Fahrenheit here. And that's about the coldest weather we've had all winter. A little bit of lake effect, a little bit of the lake effect snow machine turned on over the weekend. We did not get a lot, though. They are predicting up to about 6 to 12 inches for us by the end of today. But the southern tier of New York State, up around Lake Erie and Buffalo area, did get about a foot over the last week or so. So, hey, you know what? It's winter in the Northeast and it finally arrived. Though I heard, like, past us, once you get out of the Great Lakes and you start heading toward New England, they still don't really have much of anything. So, still unusual compared to last year that was frigid, frigid cold with lots of snow. But Happy New Year, everyone. We made it to 2016. And where did we leave off on 2015? We titled the show Friday, Google DARPA Bots. Should we just kind of talked about Big Dog and them mothballing him and Cheetah and some of the other ones? Augmented reality and assimilation. And I did that show on New Year's Day. Got up bright and early. And actually went live on the radio. So did Lonnie following me. And can you believe, you don't like the show, you don't like the show, but would you really give me a thumbs down for getting my ass out of bed New Year's Day and doing a live show, regardless if you like the material or not? I was a little annoyed by that. I didn't have to get up. That's all I gotta say. I could have stayed sleeping. It was warm and comfy in there. All right. So anyway, Google DARPA bots, augmented reality and assimilation. The assimilation, of course, was them rolling out this fully immersible internet that's on its way in 2016. Augmented reality and virtual reality, 3D goggles are gonna be the thing. The Internet of Things, of course, that's what we discovered. 2015 was talking about and getting ready for the Internet of Things. The consumer electronics shows have been full of gadgets. Anyone who pays attention to my feed, I posted something this weekend that gave a full rollout of the 2014 Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. I think it was in Vegas. That's usually where it is. And just how it was all about the Internet of Things. And now in 2015, we knew all about it. 2016, they're attaching everything to it. So look out. But that's part of the assimilation. People don't get it. They think that these are just gadgets that we're messing around with. But they're gadgets that have some sort of interactivity with our bodies. And I was trying to find the story. I had two crashes over the weekend. And so, you know how it is. You got all these tabs open. It's like, oh, do you want to recover? And I'm like, no, because there was a lot of garbage there. But then I kicked myself later because I had a show all queued up with all the stories I wanted to take a look at and check out with you guys, and they're all gone. And now it's so early in the morning, I'm not even remembering. But I did just have a flash to what the story was about. I don't know. Oh, well. It's gone. It gets wings and it flits out a window this early in the morning. Anyway, so the assimilation, people just totally miss the point that what is happening is that these devices are being integrated really without, like from a medical perspective, they're going to come at us. We're going to have all this nanotech and these remote sensing devices, remote diagnostic, quick spit on your finger and rub it on your smart screen. Tell me how old I'm gonna live type diagnostics. It's pretty crazy. We now have Google who filed a patent for their army of ambulance drones. Oh, yes. 2016 should be an interesting year. Now, we should pay attention that Google Loon, we talked about their project a few times last week. Google Loon with their cellular, I'm assuming they're saying that they are, well, it's early. What is it? LTE, the 4G technology is what the towers are going to be on those Google Loon balloons. But for a project that originally was slated to go over third world nations, it now is being launched as of the beginning of January, which is, hey, now, over the United States for a two-year test. A two-year secret test. A two-year secret test that the FCC application has the large majority of the document redacted, so we can't even read about what they're doing because it's quote-unquote trade secrets. But wait, we figure out that Google, Verizon, Amazon, and NASA are all working together on building, as well as, what was the number, like 13 other corporations. And then there were hundreds of others that were being involved in other ways to build the air traffic control system for 2016, which is not only going to be the year the Internet of Things really kicked off, like they said, but it's also going to be the year of the consumer delivery drone. Now, you can see where this is headed, cupid doll for you. But if you can't, I say you better start paying attention in 2016. Because this is the year where the world really decides that it's changing for good. And it can't happen. There cannot be drones in the sky. You cannot be hearing that. It'll drive me mad. Those are sounds of nightmares. All right. Well, I have all kinds of stuff anyway that I dug out that were queued up last week. But here's one thing. You know, we talk about NASA every once in a while. The reason we talk about NASA is because they're the yin. I think so. I think they're the yin of the yang, which is DARPA. It's the light and the dark side. Don't trust NASA. You know, they're the ones who have all the satellites and all the data. They're the ones that are in control of telling you what you should believe about what's going on in space. But this caught my attention. You know, they're really working on getting off-world. You know that for the elites, the game plan is to get off this rock, okay? It's not to stay here. It's not to deal with the disaster we made. Hey, we got synthetic biology running wild in the environment now. You know, it's game on now. The clock is ticking. They need to get off this rock. So they got all kinds of protoplanets, they think, that are going to be good substitute Earths. They're looking at all of the moons in our solar system, and there's a couple of them now that they're like, oh, look at all the water. I don't know. I think this latest one, I don't remember which one it was, but it was a new one. Maybe around Jupiter. I don't know, Pluto. Pluto has a moon with water on it, too. But there's a few moons now that they're like, huh, look, it wasn't 36 million light years away. We at least have some sort of an Erica with frozen liquid water underneath a sheet of ice, and it's damn cold. But hey, you know what? We have bases on Antarctica. Hey, they were practicing for doing a moon base in Antarctica. We know how to do that. But they're also talking about Mars. And they've been talking about, I just saw two, a couple of the other countries are talking about a moon base, but we're really talking about Mars in the United States. And NASA has officially come out now, you know, like with the Mars trip. They were talking about having that privately financed, and they were going to have a real-time reality TV show, Mars, the First Humans. And, you know, like, what dumb people? Once you go to Mars, you're never coming back. It changes your bodily make up somehow with the changed pressures there. And once you've acclimated, I read a couple stories on it. Once you've acclimated to Mars, to the higher pressures, there's no coming back. It like totally changes the way your bodily systems work. And they said that it would be very difficult once you've acclimated to acclimate back to Earth. So one way trip, but don't worry about it because all your friends and family will be able to see you on TV. And we're going to have the Hunger Games on Mars. Pretty scary thought. But there could be. Anyone ever see the thing? Yeah, it could be just like that. All I know is I'm not going to be one of the first ones to line up to get on that ship. But you know what? All kinds of people, they got hundreds of thousands of applications. There are all kinds of people who are interested in going. Well, listen to what NASA says now. So we've had the space station, International Space Station, going for quite a number of years. Always made me kind of proud. The space shuttle was supposed to be a part of that. That's like one of the crown jewels that they removed, in my opinion, long before its time. But listen to this. In the 2020s, so that's just 4 plus years from now, if you guys can even believe it. We are now in 2016. In the 2020s, NASA not only wants private space travel to help us ferry stuff back and forth to the International Space Station and the Playboy Bunny Space Mansion, right? They've been talking about that. That's not a joke. To the Moon Disney World, and I still say, hey, where the hell is it? Since the 1960s, and you haven't figured out how to commercialize the moon yet? Really? Something's wrong there. But they also want private space travel companies to take over the work in low Earth orbit. NASA just gave, now we talked about Elon Musk being in partnership and having like a 30, 25 year lease, something like that, with the Cape Canaveral facilities that NASA gave up when they got rid of some of their programs, such as the space shuttle. But Elon Musk and NASA are sharing information with the research that they're doing. This is pretty interesting, but again, another private public partnership. Anyway, NASA just gave the private sector a heads up. The International Space Agency. Sorry. I just looked over to see because I'm like, oh, you know what? I didn't even look to see if I was on air, but I am. The International Space Station, not agency, will soon have a vacancy in a NASA advisory panel meeting last week. And this was from just like a week or so ago. NASA Chief of Human Spaceflight William Gertzmayer essentially confirmed that the space agency is giving up its work in low Earth orbit. What? We are going to get out of the International Space Station as soon as we can, he says. Whether or not it gets filled in by the private sector or not, NASA's vision is we're trying to move out, says Gertzmayer. What is that? So we're like bailing on the International Space Station? Yes, I guess we are. This is, again, another one of those moments that makes me go, huh? So our space station is not going to, I mean, our space agency is not going to be involved in Earth's one and only space station. Seems a little bit odd to me. As Ars Technica's Eric Bergen writes, the decision turns NASA into the, quote, Chamber of Commerce for Outer Space, unquote. After the United States stopped supporting the International Space Station in the 2020s, a move that has been confirmed for reasons ranging from renewed U.S.-Russian tensions to aging equipment on board the space station, no successor station is planned. What? So we spent all these years working on conquering space and being the leaders, come hook or by crook, by lie or by truth. We are the victors as the first ones to the moon. We build a space station, have lots of pride. We send our Americans up there. Oops, we got rid of our space shuttle program, so we don't have any way to ferry supplies up there. We got to depend on Chinese and commercial, I don't know if we ever did the Chinese, but the Russian and commercial vessels to get supplies up there. And now we discover that instead of improving things and getting back our ability to ferry supplies up and do more experiments and whatever, I don't know, add a wing, add a Memorial Obama wing to the space station, we're bailing on it? I mean, does that make any sense to you? Because I know, being born in the 60s, growing up in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, space was a big deal to me. Watching the space shuttle launches the first reusable space plane, there's a big deal. And ever since this lunatic, how many lunatics, but this last lunatic that's been in two terms, got in there, he's like, oh, we don't have money. We need to mothball the space shuttle program. We need to cut back on all these NASA scientists. I mean, they've been doing, we need to turn down and turn off the Near Earth Object Orbiting Telescope so we don't know when there's incoming large asteroids we never saw. I mean, honestly, this has all been happening. They've been flipping switches off and decommissioning and turning things off. Now, why? I don't understand. Is it because it was making space too accessible to the everyday human? Is it because if it was a public project, that it somehow, because it was tax dollars that was being spent, gave the public the right to feel like they were a part of it? So let's give it all to large multi-billion dollar corporations to now take over space so you, the consumer, unless you're a rich fucker, aren't gonna ever, you or your children will never have a chance to go into space. It's just it not happening. All right, let's read a little bit more of this. I don't know, I was very disturbed by this story. Like, we're literally just gonna say, toodles, we're not doing the space station anymore. Wouldn't you come up with a plan B before you killed it? Wouldn't you like have the new little space pods or something? I just don't understand. I wasn't going to do the show about the space station, but I caught this as I was scrolling the news, and this had been queued up a few times, and this really bothers me, just like it bothered me when they decided they were killing the space shuttle. There was no need. Yeah, I mean, it's expensive to maintain, but how much does one bomb cost? Did you drop all kinds of them, drone bombs? How much are drones? How much are some F-35s? Get rid of the war machine. And I know, I mean, the space stuff isn't for you or me, regardless if they continue it or not. But just saying, I used to have a lot of pride in the space program before I knew any better. All right, over the weekend, NASA made its first supply refill launch for the ISS in months. That's the International Space Station. The space agency hired a private firm. They're actually a private space travel firm named Orbital ATK to replenish the six astronauts on the space station with more than 7,000 pounds of cargo and Christmas gifts. NASA's launch was delayed due to weather issues. Due to a combination of government budget cuts, yes, Obama's cutting the budget on this one as well, and declining costs for the private sector, private space companies have increasingly taken over space exploration and logistics for the USA, and NASA is steadily transitioning in the process from a full-featured space agency of the Apollo era into an R&D-focused organization that relies on contracts with the private sector. Looks like DARPA showed them exactly how to play the game. It allows them to be octopi and stick their tentacles out, find all the proper commercial partners that they can then bring into the lizard's den. Give them some lizard's milk and wean them. Oh, boy. So that's the end of that story. It was from Ars Technica. It was pretty depressing. Now, what they don't talk about in here is that, maybe in the, I'm not really going to read anymore, but I was reading another story. What the plan is, the plan, oh, they really truncated that story. There's a much longer story behind it. The plan is that they want to spend their time and effort on the Mars mission, and they really can't cost justify spending any more on the aging International Space Station. Apparently, we've been there for the last 15 years, getting expensive, and so that's the reasoning for it. But still, to me, that just doesn't make any sense. It's the International Space Station. All right. So a couple other things we talked about on Friday. I think we ended the show looking at, was Friday the mosquito day? I don't know. They all kind of bleed together. We did, maybe it wasn't Friday. Maybe it was Thursday. But we talked about that new Zika, Zikvig, Z-I-K-V, Zikvig, Zikvig, Zikvig. Okay. This new virus. It's been appearing in South America. Dengue, of course, was the precursor to that. And I was like, oh, be afraid, be very afraid. Now, we don't really get dengue up here. I know that there were a few cases maybe in California, and they were warning down in the Keys. And then we talked about the genetically modified Oxitec mosquitoes, and they wanted to let them loose. People were like, hell no, you're not letting them loose in the Keys. So then we had these pterodactyl-sized mosquitoes just mysteriously wash up in Hurricane Debbie. They're 20 times the size of normal mosquitoes, and they can stab you through clothes like knives, and they suck blood out of fish and dogs. It was pretty scary, unusual, and they kill all the indigenous mosquitoes, and don't worry, none of them have diseases. How do we know this? Well, you're not supposed to realize. We know all about them, but we're telling you that they're just going to appear here, and no, we didn't release them out in the ocean. I don't know. And there's some weird stuff going on. But now we have this new Zika, Zikvig, Z-I-K-V, I think it is. Sometimes you see it spelled a few different ways. Another mosquito-borne virus. This one is causing microcephaly in infants being born to mothers who had been bitten. And it's in pandemic. I don't think they use the word pandemic, but we went from like 14 cases to over 2,700. And this is just in the last 6 months or less. But the mosquitoes, the mosquitoes that were supposed to be combating the dengue that were also released in Brazil were only released in June. So we've seen this uptick in thousands of percent of this disease that didn't really exist before, the Zikv, Z-I-K-V, that just happened to appear right after they released these genetically modified mosquitoes. And the babies are becoming affected very similarly to how we read about them genetically modifying the Oxitec mosquito, right? The infants wither and die in infancy. I mean, these aren't all dying, the human babies, but they are going to be very badly affected for the rest of their lives with this microencephaly and head brain shrinkage. It's quite a catastrophic disease. And then I saw last night that it's spreading not only in Brazil, but now they have cases all over Puerto Rico, in other South American countries. Guys, I think there's something bad going on. I mean, there's always something bad going on, but these Oxitec mosquitoes were so evil to begin with, and they weren't going to let them release them in the U.S. So, like, hell no, you didn't do any environmental studies. Going to let these things go into the wild and not know what's going to happen? And they said, all right, let's go to some other South American or Caribbean nation like Cayman Islands. I'm pretty sure, you know, before the ones in Florida showed up, there'd been a release in the Cayman Islands. Cayman Islands isn't that too far from Florida. And I'm sure if a hurricane whipped by the Cayman Islands and then headed toward Florida, which they do sometimes, they could very easily pick up a swath of mosquitoes 20 times normal size and carry them into Florida. Just saying, you know, we're all part of one big Petri dish experiment. And just because you do it over there and it's far away doesn't mean it's not going to affect me over here. All right. So I wanted to point out, though, we have these mosquito-borne diseases now that are spreading lovelily around the warm nether regions of the globe. But now we see, this is what I talked about Thursday or Friday, we never got to. There's now a flu virus in pigs that is showing a worrisome pandemic profile, says study, according to the Medical Express. Tests on the most common type of influenza found in Chinese pigs revealed that it has the potential to transmit easily in humans, posing a pandemic threat similar to the virus that triggered a pandemic in the 2009 after jumping from swine to people. So put on a seatbelt. That swine flu, quote-unquote, pandemic that tried to force the, quote-unquote, experimental unapproved FDA vaccines that were imported from Europe because they said we had a shortage here, which we really didn't, declared a state of emergency, which it really wasn't, and then opened the door to that, and I don't remember the name of that, Project BioShield, that's what it was, kickback from the Bush days, where in the case of a real emergency, they would be allowed to use unapproved vaccinations and other drugs on a populace if it were impending danger and doom. And they tried to pull that one on us with swine flu back in 2009, but it didn't work. A research team from China and Japan isolated 139. This sounds really dangerous. They isolated 139 Eurasian avian-like H1N1 swine influenza viruses during 139 of them during surveillance in Chinese pigs from 2010 to 2013. And then they put the viruses through its paces to assess its pandemic threat, including experiments in ferrets to gauge transmissibility in mammals. And yeah, ferrets are one of those animals, I don't know exactly, but I think that they easily transmit to humans. Ferrets are so cute. They're like little kitty cat weasels with a little stink to them. But what do you think of this? They isolated 139 Eurasian avian-like H1N1 swine influenza viruses from these Chinese pigs. Now, I just read a story a couple weeks back that they finally have reached this point of no return in regards to antibiotics and antibiotic resistance. And it's interesting because last summer we had Obama execute an executive order to help defend against the end of being able to use antibiotics because of antibiotic resistance. And of course, it's all our fault because the doctors overprescribed antibiotics. Now it's your fault, my fault, and little Johnny's fault that we took those antibiotics. They weren't really doing anything except for making the bacteria that they killed much stronger. So now we've crossed this line. So put on a seatbelt because there's an executive order ready and waiting to help with all that. I saw a story the other day. We've crossed that line with a bacteria, strangely enough, that's come out of where? China. That no longer responds to any zero, zip, nada, zilcho, any antibiotics at all. None. They said we're totally... That stuff gets out, they don't know what they're going to do. Completely, completely innocuous. Is that the word? Yeah. Well, antibiotics are innocuous to this super bacteria. What are they going to do? Well, guess what? They found it running rampant in Chinese chickens. We got 139, according to the story, Eurasian avian-like H1N1 swine influenza viruses in Chinese pigs. And we have a new completely 100% antibiotic-resistant bacteria in Chinese chicken. Yet they're starting a clone factory in China to clone chickens, pigs, cows, and even humans. And we're not, I don't know, this just is, it's like they're setting it up. We're going to be shipping Chinese animals for food all over. I mean, I used to joke about don't eat the Chinese chicken, but I mean it now. Don't eat the Chinese chicken. They found a case of this Chinese chicken bacteria now in Denmark. I don't think the dude was doing too well either. I don't know. We'd have to look that one up. But they're worried. Because now it's in Europe. And if this gets out and it starts to spread, they're not really quite sure what they're going to do about it. But don't worry because, hey, Obama passed an executive order last summer all about antibiotic-resistant bacteria because we knew so much about it then. And we did, but just seems like it was a little before jumping the gun there, Barry. You inked it. It was supposed to be July of 2016, you dope. We didn't have an outbreak yet of that Chinese chicken bacteria. He's like, nah, no one will notice. My robo pen was in overdrive that day. Anyway, back to the story with the pig viruses. So, yes, don't worry about it. It's a similar threat to the virus that triggered a pandemic in 2009 with that whole scary swine flu. Now, a research team from China and Japan isolated 139 Eurasian avian-like H1N1 swine influenza viruses during surveillance of Chinese pigs from 2010 to 2013. And then put the virus through its paces to assess its pandemic threat, including experiments in ferrets to gauge transmissibility in mammals. They reported their findings yesterday in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. One of two swine H1N1 lineages, the Eurasian avian-like H1N1, swine influenza virus has been circulating in pigs in several Eurasian countries since 1979. Excuse me, and infected several humans in Europe and China, one fatally in China in 2011. Little is known about its evolution in the properties, however, which researchers said prompted the study. The team noted that China is the world's largest pork-producing country. You know, maybe that's why pork makes me feel sick every time I eat it. I mean, it literally does. It just rips my guts apart. And that flu viruses can spread easily once introduced into the unvaccinated herds. For the surveillance part of the study, investigators sampled more than 34,000 pigs from 24 Chinese provinces, and of the 228, EAH1N1 was by far the most common strain and was found in 10 of China's provinces. Genetic sequencing found that the strains formed 5 genotypes and fell, you know, God, come on, this is Monday morning. After the holidays, I don't want to be reading this. So, all right, let's cut to the chase, get to the bottom. The wake-up call is that Michael Osterholm, director of the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, or SIDRAP for short, said that these findings are very sobering, quote unquote. He said it may be a wake-up call that alerts the world to a virus that has pandemic potential similar to the one that emerged in 2009. And he said that although the research community has been watching flu viruses in pigs and poultry since the 90s, the emergence of the pandemic in 2009 caught it totally by surprise. Of course it did. So we could claim we had a shortage of vaccinations and then declare a state of emergency. Then let that squalene sneak in here from Europe without going through the FDA under Project BioShield. Yeah, that emergence of the pandemic that caught us by surprise. And the thing is, since 2001, I took those FEMA classes in like 06 or whatever. That's a bunch of crap that it caught them by surprise. They've been preparing for this. They're like, the terrorists are going to do it. We need to prepare for pandemic. That's what they were working on, the universal flu vaccine at Texas A&M and the tobacco plant back then. You know, that's bullshit that it caught them by surprise. It did not. And based on these new findings, and remember that swine flu? Wasn't that the swine for blurred? Swine, bird, dog, chicken. It was like 4 different animal flu viruses all crisscrossed, chip-chopped into one pandemic. They're like, no, we've never before seen anything like this before. It's a little, the son of Dr. Frankenstein, Dr. Johnny Jr. Frankenstein, was playing with his, you know, flu virus kitty got for Christmas and said, Daddy, look what I discovered. And they said, oh, Johnny, walking in Daddy's footsteps. Let's let that loose and see what happens. This might be fun for us to play pandemic. I don't know. Just seems suspicious that never before seen all these animal flus all mixed up into one. I don't know. Good Monday radio, guys. Mondays are rough for me. I'm still recovering. So this is why we, of course, need, and here's the end of the story. And yes, this is what I've been saying. Quote, this is not me. This is this Dr. Frankenstein, whatever his name was, Holber Stober. This is why we need game-changing influenza vaccines, he says. Noting that if another pandemic emerged tomorrow, the world would likely be faced again with too little pandemic vaccine, too late, offering at best moderate protection. Put on a seatbelt, Johnny. You know, with the next outbreak, we're going to have Google Medevac drones delivering vaccinations to you and me. And the way they're going to do it, they know where your mailbox is. They're going to use the USPS mail system to be able to bag and tag you. Because everybody's got a mailbox. Everyone gets mail. You might not have a GPS address, but you get mail somewhere. I don't know. I guess we'll see. Now, that's what I've been watching for a while. In Tasmania, those cute little Tasmanian devils that we all remember from Bugs Bunny. I can't do a Tasmanian devil impression right now. I was going to try, but I can't. It's too cold, man. This is 11 degrees. My feet are like blocks of ice already. I'm ready to go inside. The cute little Tasmanian devil, though, a couple years ago, Tasmania is right off the coast of Australia, very south. And that little Tasmanian devil was getting this horrible form of cancer. And they had discovered that the cancer was contagious. And I was like, whoa. You don't hear about that too often. You know, they've been telling us for years that cancer and leukemias and all this crap's not contagious. Go hug Aunt Betty after chemo. But they found a contagious cancer in Tasmanian devils. Well, it appears that now there's another one. Again, what a great place to experiment. Little island way down in the lower South Pacific off the coast of any large body of land. You know, might be a good place to drop a vial of something and see what happens. It says a new form of contagious cancer has been discovered by scientists. And I remember, too, back a few months ago, we started reading about how potentially Alzheimer's might be contagious as well. They're thinking that it could be carried in the blood. And we talked about some of the things that, you know, could be causing that with the mad cow and whatever. But there's also another story here about it's potentially a fungus that causes Alzheimer's. So we'll look at that if we have time. A new form of contagious cancer has been discovered by scientists. And not only does it mean that such cancers are not as rare as we originally thought, researchers say that this disease can wipe out an entire species. Hey, how awesome is that? Some new disease out of the blue just discovered that, oh, can wipe out entire species? Wow, we've been seeing a lot of those lately just appearing out of the blue. How incredibly amazing is that? What are the chances? I think we should all run out and play the lotto tonight. Honestly, I mean, come on. Could wipe out an entire species, never before seen, first ever discovered. It's not rare. We thought it was rare. Like one in a million, we found a contagious cancer. But look, we got even a more contagious one. I mean, guys, this shit, I got to tell you, this stuff gets me to the point where, like, some days I just feel like I can't even do it anymore because it's not funny. This is not funny. Like, I used to joke and be all sarcastic and ha ha. This isn't funny. It's not a joke. I know I try to spin it like a joke, but it's not. It's really hard for me to read this stuff every day. So, to date, there were two known forms of transmissible cancers in nature, and this included forms of the tumor spreadable between Tasmanian devils as well as between dogs and soft-shell clams. This led scientists believing that after such a transfer of a living cancer cell was rare. But now, whoops, there's been a discovery of a third, thought it was two, third form. However, it indicates that these cancers may arise more frequently than we once thought. A team of researchers from the University of Tasmania, Australia, and the University of Cambridge in the UK. Yeah, it's like the pit of AI. There's all kinds of stuff going on in Cambridge. Found this form of transmissible cancer in the Tasmanian devil in Australia, a second such cancer in the dog-like marsupial which can only be found in the wild on the Australian island. Known as devil facial tumor disease, and yeah, it's pretty gruesome. It's very sad. They're very cute little animals, and when I first started seeing this, it made me very sad. It was first discovered in the animal in 1996, but this new discovery has identified a second form of the disease, which looks similar, but has a genetic makeup with a distinct chromosomal arrangement from the first form of the devil facial tumor disease. Oh, so they took it in a lab, mixed it up real nice, and then re-released it to see what would happen. I mean, they have been doing, who knows, but they have been doing all kinds of experiments down there to try to save the Tasmanian devil before it wipes them out permanently. Cancers normally cannot survive beyond the body of the host, but this transmissible cancer can through biting. See the transfer of living cancer cells between animals. So it's a bite, and they can transfer cancer cells. Think about just like what a potent weapon that would be. Right? We biowarfare programs never ended, remember? We just had to go on the defensive with the vaccination program per Richard Nixon in 1972 or 3 when he inked that agreement. But by studying transmissible cancers between Tasmanian devil bites, well, look at that. Looky, looky. We got our hands on the pathogen to be toyed with and manipulated in the lab. Oh, okay. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the secretive biowarfare programs that are still going on to this day. The study finds that tumors affect the face and mouth first before rapidly spreading throughout the entire body of the Tasmanian devil. This has led to much of the Tasmanian devil population being affected, with many usually dying within months of contracting the cancer, so very fast acting as well. And this has led to the widespread decline in their population, with an estimated 8% full drop over the last 20 years. Wow, fast acting killing cancer. Sounds like something they'd want to release in South America. In the mosquitoes. Watch, that'll happen next. Just saying. I mean, guys, anything goes now. Remember, we got gene editing kits you can buy. And you can tinker and start messing around with genetically modifying bacteria in your garage. Anything goes now. The new discovery was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science Journal this December after it was detected in 8 Tasmanian devils in southern Tasmania. Researchers say that it raises questions about the current level of understanding when it comes to cancers that can spread between individuals. Wait, we've been running after the cure for cancer for how many, 20, 30, 40 years, decades? And we're just going, we need to understand this shit better. Really? How is it possible? We're getting ready here to cure cancer with nanobots. Just, Johnny, put them in your bloodstream. We're going to cure all that ails you. Yet we're saying that we don't understand cancer? And whoops, somehow it's transmissible now through spit or biting? And it could wipe out entire populations? This sounds like weaponized cancer to me, people. I didn't know any better. I mean, this isn't new, 1996, but I have been reading, it's 20 years now, I have been reading about this transmissible cancer in Tasmanian devils for a long time. And now they're just saying that, wow, I guess we just don't understand cancer. I call bullshit on all of this. This is until now. We have always thought that transmissible cancers arising in nature are extremely rare. But this new discovery makes us question that belief. Well, isn't it amazing how we're finding out that cancers may be transmissible and Alzheimer's may be transmissible? And gee, it's time to get vaccinated, everybody, to protect you from all of these threats out there. And is that what they're doing? Are they trying to make you afraid now everywhere? And all this stuff that you thought you were safe against, you even weren't safe against that. So now that we have discovered that this has happened a second time, it makes us wonder if Tasmanian devils might be particularly vulnerable to developing this type of disease, or if transmissible cancers may not be as rare in nature as we had once previously thought. Dun, dun, dun. All right, and I think we're going to wrap Monday up with this one. And then we'll continue. Yeah, I got the story for after this for Tuesday. This is out of Science Alert. A fungal infection in the brain could be linked to Alzheimer's, says study. There's a lot of things that they're saying could be linked to Alzheimer's. I still say, who the hell knows? But I would think, and funny enough, I think it actually was a Dr. McCullough story that we had probably read once before. But funny enough, Luke Radowski of We Are Changed shared a Dr. McCullough story last week. And I think it was the one that we read before. Here it is. About the intriguing connections, and we've dug deep into this, between Alzheimer's, mad cow disease, and chronic wasting disease. And we dug way deep into that, and yeah, it's very unusual. And we started finding out when we were digging into that, that Alzheimer's, then, they believe, is transmissible not only through like blood transfusions and stuff, but also through like dental work and that. So not good. We're going to see this big blossoming of things that they're going to try to point to, you know, it's all natural. I don't think any of this stuff is natural. I don't think that this mad science, I think some of this they knew about, some of this transmissibility. We found out in that bovine leukemia virus that was in all the milk, remember, that now they're finding it in breast tumors. Yes, they are. But we've been drinking bovine leukemia virus for 20 or 30 years since they first discovered it, because they thought originally that it wouldn't affect humans. All right, anyway, a fungal infection in the brain could be linked to Alzheimer's, says study. A simple brain fungus could be behind some forms of Alzheimer's, a controversial new study suggests, after the same type of fungal infection was found in brains affected by the degenerative disease. While the results are intriguing, you know, I've been reading, too, that there's been some resistant fungus that some people have been getting up in their sinuses and blaming the sinus and the lung, upper respiratory, on some bacterial agent and can't get rid of it. And it ends up being like some really bad fungal infection. That was all last year, actually even a couple years before. Fungal infections are hard to get rid of. The possibility that Alzheimer's disease is a fungal disease, or that fungal infection is a risk factor for the disease, opens new perspectives for effective therapy for these patients, concludes the report published in Scientific Reports. The slow progression of the disease fits well with the chronic nature of fungal infections if they remain untreated. Moreover, inflammation and activation of the immune system may be due to an infectious fungal agent. A team of molecular biologists led by Luis Carrasco from the University of Madrid in Spain examined the brains of 25 cadavers, 14 of which had the degenerative disease, whereby the other 11 healthy brains showed no trace of the disease at all. And even with such a small sample, it's a strong correlation. And the team is trying to figure out what that means. At this stage, it is not clear whether the fungus could be causing the disease or vice versa, but it has the potential to give doctors a clear target for treatment. There are many antifungal drug treatments out there for various conditions, and one of these could be adapted in order to slow down or treat the progression of Alzheimer's. I don't know. I mean, I call bullshit on that, but maybe it's a brain-eating fungus. I mean, we see these flesh-eating diseases everywhere, and the brain-eating amoebas all last summer, remember? I don't know. They're putting out like studies here and they're not even sure yet. So you shouldn't be putting stuff like that out. But it also says scientists have already come to understand how misshapen proteins can kill off nerve cells. And right, those are the prions, creating pockets of dead tissue that are responsible for Alzheimer's. Whether these rogue proteins are just natural consequences of getting older or whether there is some external cause remains to be seen. And the body of research amassed so far has yet to conclude one way or another, but they pointed out it seems unlikely that fungus is behind all cases of dementia. Do, do, do. So who knows? We got brain rot, mushrooms on the brain. So, all right, guys, well, guess what? That's Monday in the bag. Thank God it was a quick one, and it is cold here. Make sure you stick around, though, because it is Monday. So Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next, and we have all kinds of great shows this evening. Brand new Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Tiberville, and the boys at 11 o'clock, Nick and DB, are live. Great, great shows from this weekend air tonight. Unlock the Door, Interesting Times with Tim Kelly, Corbett Report with good old James Corbett. And actually, his was on the oil story. There was lots and lots. And Alan Watt, of course. So, all right, make sure you guys stick around. It is Monday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care. Woo!